I almost clicked the cancel button on the call there. Here we go. And a one, and a two, and welcome to the Tales from the Long Box podcast. This is episode 74. Spotlight on Monkey Brain Comics. I am Chris Mosby.
I am Caleb Gerard.
And I am Murray Fox.
All right, as it said in the title, we are talking about Monkey Brain Comics.
Right, they're half a year old.
Yeah, the brainchild of...
a monkey.
Yes. Chris Roberson and Allison Baker, which I believe is his wife.
I think so.
Yes. She's familiar.
And for the uneducated, uninitiated, who is Chris Roberson?
Yes, Chris Roberson is he is a New York Times best-selling writer. He's best known for his Eisner-nominated ongoing comic book series iZombie, co-created with artist Mike Allred. His modern fantasy series Memorial, co-created with artist Rich Ellis, and the Fables spinoff Cinderella miniseries. And his work on Superman, which he took over for JMS, the walking issues. He also wrote Star Trek Legion of Superheroes, which is probably one of the coolest intercompany crossovers ever, I think. I mean, that kind of stuff has been done in the past, like, you know, Star Trek and X-Men and, you know, things like that. And you read that Star Trek and the Legion, and you think, oh, that's really crappy. But he did a great job on that.
Cooler than JLA Avengers? I don't know about that.
No, not that cool. No. No, I meant completely separate properties, kind of like doing the Doctor Who and the Star Trek one, which I read the first issue of that, and it was okay. Of course, it was a doctor that I hadn't seen any of the episodes of. So anyway, he also did Elric the Balanced Lost, which is a very, very good series, even though it took forever to get done. If you're an Elric fan, that's something to check out. That's all on Comixology. And according to his page here on the Monkey Brain Comics site, his favorite food is meat. He's allergic to wheat, and his favorite cocktail is Cali Farina, national drink of Brazil. Okay, very nice.
Alrighty.
Sounds like a porn star.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, not touching that.
Good lord.
Cali Farina.
So anyway, talk about Monkey Brain Comics. Oh man. Cat escapes. That's Caleb just sent us a funny link, and now I'm totally off track.
I'm easily distracted.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, he became big into the limelight about 6 months ago when he talked about his iZombie book with Vertigo being canceled, and he was never going to work for DC ever again. I believe that was that one of the ones that did that.
Yes, I don't think it was because his series was canceled. I think that was
coming anyway. Yeah,
I think so. I think he was.
Let's see if I can find.
He's big on creators' rights, and he felt uncomfortable working for a company that maybe didn't treat. I think it kind of got wrapped up in the Before Watchmen debate and a little bit of the Schuster debate, a little bit of everything, and
now I remember him making a comment about he hated the fact that DC's the one with the rights to Legion of Superheroes and things like that. But anyway, he actually had this company's been around for quite a while, like 2001. And I think he was doing some stuff on his own. But in 2012, along with all that, they launched a new creator-owned digital comics line called Monkey Brain Comics, which is on Comixology. And they have done several good books, which is one of the reasons we want to spotlight them.
Totally. They were, I think they were aiming for like July 4th. Is that what you guys have as your Independence Day?
That's the day that it happened. Yeah, exactly.
It was supposed to be, and then there was so much interest in it that they start like right July 1st, I think, for Canada Day. Woohoo!
There you go.
Oh, wow, Canada Day.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's right. It says, yeah, sure, they were overshadowed a day after their launch announcement when Marvel hit the mainstream press with their news about Marvel Now. So, yeah.
What? Marvel Now, that was really?
That came out like the day after, apparently. Yeah.
Really?
This is it from the article on Tor.com. It says, they came out during the week of July 4th and launched their lineup of five brand new digital series. And then, you know, Marvel Now came up right after that, so.
Really? Wow. I didn't even think Marvel Now had been announced that early, but I guess it had. I guess they would have
like a lot longer, but.
They were doing all those ads where stuff was blacked out. Not blacked out, but you could see.
Oh, yeah, all the teaser crap. Yeah, I remember that now.
Right. Either way, there was, like, tons of excitement when Monkey Brain was launched, and they started with their five series.
Yes, it was.
And we talked about the number ones. We talked about all those.
Yeah. We did, yeah.
And now, 6 months later, it's time to check in and see where they're all at.
Yes.
See what they're doing well. See what they need to do better.
All right. Who wants to start?
I will. Sure. I'm getting four or five of their series regularly.
You're getting Bandette because you're always.
I'm getting Bandette. I love it, but it comes out so infrequently.
Yes,
like,
it does.
So, yeah, I'm getting it, but it doesn't. That's that would be one of the drawbacks of Monkey Brain. And maybe it's not. Well, no, I mean, it is. Like if
you, well, and it's probably because, you know, they're doing this creator-owned stuff and probably not any money off the top of their head, and they're off the top, and they're trying to they probably have to take paying gigs, and this gets done when it gets done, you know?
I guess so.
That's just my take on it.
The one complaint I would have with Monkey Brain is that there are some series that come out regularly, which is great. Like you come back week after week and you see, oh, there's something new. And then there are the other series that come out sometimes. you never know when they're going to come out. And that's, I don't know. I would rather see a set schedule. Like I'd rather know that every 6 weeks I'm going to see this, or every, like, it doesn't have to be every, it doesn't have to be monthly, although I mean I would like monthly, but I mean I would just prefer like a set, like I would like to know that in 6 weeks or 8 weeks I'm going to see this, rather than just kind of checking week after week wondering.
Yeah Now that was the thing, Dynamite was doing that, a really good Lone Ranger comic, and it was real bad about that same thing, and they would put out, you know, 6 months out in monthly like it's supposed to, and then there would be nothing for months. And then all of a sudden all these comics would come out, and it's interesting. But, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So has Bandette been coming out on time?
It comes out kind of every 2 months, maybe.
Well, I mean, its first issue came out the same time as Edison Rex, which is Robertson's book. And I just read number 5, and it's only up to number 3.
So what is Bandette about? I don't remember number 1. So.
It's kind of a fun one. It's Paul Tobin and Colleen Coover, and the main character is like this French cat thief? What do you call them? Cat burglar. She's like a, you know, a thief.
She steals cats. Oh, wait a minute. She sets up cats to go into prisons with.
Yeah.
Totally. She's like a cat burglar. She steals arty stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got this little network of Parisian helpers throughout the town. So she's got like the, I was going to say the pizza delivery guy, but he doesn't deliver pizza. It's,
he delivers love.
Yeah. I think that's a possibility later on, but it's like pitas or something else.
Yeah.
He's a food delivery guy.
Pitas?
I don't know. I will have to double check. He's a food deliverer. And then there's, you know, like there's a network of little ballerinas that she's just got a collection. She's almost like the Shadow in that she's got this collection of people throughout the town of Paris.
Yeah. Here's a description on Comixology, which you've hit most of it, but it says Adventures of Bandette, a young costumed quote unquote artful dodger. We'll play on words here. Leader of a group of urchins dedicated to serving justice, except when thieving proves to be a bit more fun. The story of Bandette threads a thin line between Tintin and Nancy Drew with a few costumes thrown in. Bandette and her crew joins forces and cross swords with a mysterious master thief known only as Monsieur, and one B.D. Bellic, perhaps the most harassed police inspector of all time. So, interesting. The first one I read was pretty fun. I have to admit that.
I really like it. It's got such a great vibe, and the artwork is beautiful. I love Pauline Kubert. Hello?
There? You there? Wrapped in a blanket? Did you get kidnapped?
No.
Okay, I can hear you now. Can you hear him now,
Caleb? My voice vanished.
Okay.
Uh-oh. Maybe I covered the mic. Either way, I love it. I think the artwork is beautiful. It's really expressive. It's one of those books where I'm going to say this carefully. You don't need the words to see what they're feeling and expressing, but the words are great too. Don't get me wrong. I don't want some wordless book. No.
I think we've established that with you.
But the artwork is beautiful, and the story's fun too. Like it's playful, and when they describe it as a cross between Tintin and Nancy Drew, that's a great, great descriptor.
And it's a husband and wife team working on this book, actually.
Yes, it is.
Paul Toobin, of course, he's, you know, for anybody who's a mainstream, especially Marvel reader, he's done a ton of work for them. And then Colleen Coover, that's his wife. And I guess she's done some work for the big dogs as well. But they did this and a couple other creator-owned things.
Yeah, they did Banana Sunday, I think, for Oni Press.
Yes.
And I think they did something called Gingerbread Girl, maybe?
Yes.
One I haven't read, I mean to. But they do good work. They do good work. And
cool.
And Bandette is fun. There's each chunk that you get, like each chapter is kind of a separate story, like you can get a complete meal out of each
complete meal
out of each chapter, but you get the sense that there's something building in the background too.
That's interesting.
And as an aside, I mean, I mentioned I think before we started recording how short each of these particular books are, which, by the way, 99 cents on Comixology. So I don't think we should expect novel length comic books at that price, but they are very jam-packed for that short of stories. I mean, I almost feel like each issue could be a different one, and I think that's a great touch and a great feeling for the ones that I've read.
Yes. Yeah, totally. Like,
but with a continuing story, with a continuing plot thread.
Yeah, I was going to say, each one is sort of separate, but the very last installment, chapter 3 there, ends on a big cliffhanger, I think. I mean, you still get a complete story, but it's a complete story with a tune in next time for the conclusion of...
Interesting.
Either way, it's still it's lots of fun.
Same band.
It is lots.
Same bandage.
Mm-hmm. And you're right. Like, for 99 cents, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Awesome. And this has been the complaint, you know, I mean, not to get on, you know, too much of a tangent, but that's been the complaint about the pricing with a lot of the mainstream stuff that comes through, you know, either in print or on Comixology, is mm-hmm. the price is still inflated, especially the Marvel stuff. I mean,
oh, good
know,
Lord, yeah.
DC tries, but the Marvel stuff doesn't, they don't even put up a front. No.
They don't care. It's like, this is going to be $4. It doesn't matter. You know, you get 20 today. This week you get 20 pages.
Yeah.
Next week you might get 22 or 19. You know, just whatever we feel like putting out.
And these books, none of them are really the same length. But you know, for 99 cents, they're all exceeding a dozen pages, and you know,
right.
And they're full. They're very full pages.
Which is why, for that same reason, I love the Batman Beyond. And the Legends of the Dark Knight, I think it is, that mm-hmm. DC puts out. It's like 99 cents and it comes out every other week, I think, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And those are usually over 20 pages every time. And on top of all that, they're actually good.
Yes, in the Smallville, I've read a couple of the Smallville's and they're pretty good as well.
Yeah, I haven't read those because I still haven't watched the series. One of these days I'm going to watch the entire series.
Alright, whatever.
And then I'll catch up.
So, Bandette, worth catching up on, Murray, or is it...
That's only 99 cents for three issues right now, so yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the best that Monkey Brain puts out. Mm-hmm. It would be better if it came out regularly, but...
mm-hmm. Yes.
But having said that, it's really good. You're not going to get... Like, for $3, you're going to get a lot of story, a lot of beautiful art, and it's well worth your $3.
Yep.
And I'll tell you, one of my favorite is their least published one, which is October Girl. I think it's only up to number 2.
Yes,
I love that one too.
There was something I couldn't remember. I had bought the first issue and it seems like I liked it, and I saw there was only one more, so I went ahead and I just got through buying that myself. I'm gonna read that later.
It's really good, but what the hell?
I don't know, man. Who puts that out? Let's read about that real quick. Autumn Ackerman has always known she was a little different, but she had no idea how different she really is. 18 years old and with no hope of a future beyond working behind the counter in a small town's coffee shop, Autumn is about to discover that everything she thinks she knows about the world is wrong. The first chapter of a brand new dark fantasy story for teens and adults by critically acclaimed artist and writer Matthew Don Smith, which has apparently worked on Doctor Who and Witchblade. So, yeah, that one was, from what I remember, it's been a while since I read it, the first one, but it seemed very interesting. So, yeah, I'm looking
forward to it. Oh, no, and it is, and it surprised me. I mean, the guy is the writer and the artist, so there is no one else he has to rely on to get this book out, and we're only up to 2 issues in 6 months.
Yeah, it's like I said, though, you don't know what else he's doing. I mean...
I honestly only picked up the number 2 because we were discussing this. I would never have known it was out. I
see. It's a good point.
And I think that's we mentioned it earlier, but I think that's bad business mm-hmm. practice. You need to.
Yeah. I understand what you're saying. I agree totally. Because some of these other ones, the Amelia Cole, for example. They've got 5 issues out, which I just got through. I didn't realize they were so far along. And Edison Rex.
As does Masks and Mobsters.
Yeah, that's true, and that hasn't been out as long either. Mm-hmm.
So, I'm just saying, I really like it. It's like when they used to... Lost, they would like show 5 episodes, and then it would be 3 months before there'd be another episode.
Oh, I hated that so much.
It's like, what happened? And they would, and the recap was not sufficient. And, momentum. They almost killed the show because of that, and that could easily kill this mm-hmm. book.
One of these days, I'm going to watch that all the way through again. I'll still be mad at the ending, but. That's a whole other podcast right there.
That totally is.
Let's see. Let's go. Let's talk about Action Cats. What's that about? Meat, which Caleb and Murray has recommended that I read this, which I, you know, purchased it before the episode, so we'll be reading that later. Says meet Jack Jetpack Cat, Aqua Cat, Roller Skate Cat, and Karate Cat. Oh, I like the sound of this already. The Astounding Action Cats. When action calls, they answer unless it's nap time or there's a sunbeam or a particularly active butterfly to catch. No, don't worry. We mean it. The action cats will save the day. Oh, that's kind of funny. That sounds funny.
It is very cute. It says here it's recommended for ages 9 and above, and I disagree. I think it's recommended for all ages.
I'll have to let my nephews read that later, maybe, if I can get them to sit still long enough.
It's funny. I kept being reminded of The Mighty Heroes for some reason. It had that tone.
Oh, that sounds familiar. The Mighty Heroes.
The Mighty Heroes, Diaper Man, Strong Man, Rope Man, Cuckoo Man, and Tornado Man.
Oh, yeah, that does sound familiar.
I've never heard of these.
Oh, my God. It was a great cartoon back in the... Oh, I don't remember who did it. But it's just goofy superhero cartoon, and I think they did like a couple comics based on it. But anyhow, Action Cats, the art is really, really simple art. There's nothing overly clever. And these four cats, they get their superpowers from wearing these suits, and they're exactly who they say they are. There's a jetpack flying cat. There's an underwater aqua cat. There's one that rides roller skates, and there's the karate guy, who is... His real name is Mr. Cuddle Buns or something like that.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And they're owned by this woman, and she punishes them, and it's cute.
That sounds hilarious, actually.
I think even people who don't like cats would like this book.
What? There are people that don't like cats?
That's crazy. Yeah, I'm not too fond of cats, I admit it.
What?
I love the logo. It's, you know, Action Cats, and it's kind of explosive lettering, and then it's got a ball of twine with a fuse coming out of it.
That's a big yarn ball bomb. I will have to look at it. For some reason, I totally missed it when it came out, and I haven't picked it up, but it looks like it'll be fun.
I'll tell you.
I'm gonna sit down later. I'm gonna reread it with my 5-year-old. Check it out. And I hope it comes out regularly. I don't know if this is a... Because it seems like some of these are one-shots and some of these are regular series. So I would hope... actually, it says it's a one-shot.
Oh, okay.
It's a one-shot by Adam Nave. Lauren and Lauren Vogelbaum wrote it. And then Iman Doherty is the artist. Mm. I would like to see more from these guys. I'm surprised it's two people writing it. There's not a lot of dialogue in this book, but... Paper credit is due, and I again, it's a great all ages kid, you know, book. You know, cat owners will get some of the jokes that happen when they're not in costume. But overall, again, and anybody out there who knows Mighty Heroes will understand the tone.
That sounds so familiar.
Suggesting here,
I gotta have to look that up now.
While you were discussing next book, I will find a link to Mighty Heroes.
All right, I got it. Boom. Mighty Heroes.
There you go.
I can't believe I've never seen this before. I got a new website still up. Toonpedia. Nope, not anymore. Next Monkey Brain.
Ralph Bakshi. Wow, cool.
Nice.
Diaper Man. Oh, this was in 66. No wonder I don't remember it. I thought this was something new. I'm like, crap, how could I miss something like that?
There were 21 episodes.
Next one up. This one was good, but it's more of a fairy tale. And I don't know. It was okay. It didn't really grab me, but I think you guys liked it. The Aesop's Ark. Animals on the Ark, exchanging anecdotes, sharing stories to weather the storm. Fables will keep them afloat during the flood. Listen and learn. So it's kind of interesting. Not sure who did that, but
who's doing that? Yeah, I picked up the first issue. I haven't picked up any of the others.
That would be really something good to read to kids, I think.
Oh, I think so. I think it would be
13 pages for 99 cents on the first issue.
Yeah, I think what I thought about it is that it was maybe the wrong – digital was maybe the wrong format for the story that they're telling.
I think so too, yeah.
The artwork is beautiful, but it doesn't lend itself to – maybe it lends itself to computer screens that are bigger, better than it does the iPad. Like the iPad, it was – to look at the whole screen – I think you missed a lot, and if you did the, what do they call it, the panel by panel?
Yeah.
Look, it doesn't fit with the panels because the panels aren't traditional, you know, six boxes per page. It's very artistic, and it kind of flows across the page. It's something you need to kind of have in your hand or have really, really big, I think, to really enjoy it. Like, it would make a great book. It would make a great picture book, I think.
Yeah, that's what I got of it, a storybook. I think that would have been a better choice for it, but it is still good.
No, I don't remember. We discussed this, many moons ago when we first touched on this company, but are they going to bind these? Are they going to collect these and sell them?
I don't know. I would imagine it'd have to be how much sales are, how much the call for it is. I haven't heard anything. I mean, I'm looking at their website. They've got a lot of tiles, we got things in a tile format. I don't see anything about them doing that.
I think they're going on a case by case.
Yeah, they might.
Basis, maybe leaving it up to the creators, maybe.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah. And you can sign up on their website to get news, too, by the way, when it comes out.
Right.
So. Yeah, and there's nothing on Amazon about Aesop's Ark, for instance.
Yeah, that one, I think that would be a really good one. Of course, Bandette needs a little bit more content before you can get a trade of it. Let's see.
Yeah. Yeah, they got nothing. There's nothing monkey brain on Amazon.
I think it's probably too soon for any of them to be collected at this point.
I would think so, yeah.
No, I agree. I just thought maybe that's a good place to start looking for.
Yeah. True.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
True.
Let's see. The next one, it's one of the first ones that came out, Amelia Cole and the Unknown World.
Right.
I remember the first one very well, and I went ahead and bought there's five issues out. I went ahead and bought all of them, the last four, because I really enjoyed it. Let's see. She says, Amelia Cole lives in two worlds, literally. One runs on magic, the other built on technology. When the barriers between those worlds start to break down, Amelia and her aunt Danny must take extreme action. Start of a whole new world of adventure, magic, and excitement as Amelia Cole steps forward to do what she knows is right, even when the consequences might be wrong. Written by Eisner and Harvey Award winners Adam P. Knave and DJ Kirkblade, and drawn by Nick Brokenshire, lettered by Rachel Deering. I liked the art and the story in it a lot. It was, they say, and it was 31 pages for $1.99. Yeah, these are $1.99. And you get a full comic out of them, from what I can tell. I haven't looked at the others. Yeah, 25 pages for number two. And it wasn't, I mean, you could probably read this to kids okay. It wasn't dumbed down or not. I thought it was had enough of oomph to it for even adults. So it was a very interesting concept.
Yeah, I don't think I loved the first issue. I think I liked the story.
Yeah, there was something about it that really clicked with me. I think love would be a strong word for it, but I do like it.
I wasn't in love with the art. The art didn't click for me, mm-hmm. but I Having said that, I did go back and I picked up issues 2 to 5 in the last week, and I read them, and I really like the series. The art is kind of growing on me. Like it suits the series. So that's the important thing to me. Like whether I don't know whether I would follow this artist to another book, but I think what he's doing on Amelia Cole suits the book, and it's I'm coming around. I'm coming around on the art side of it, and the story side I think is pretty cool. It's kind of like it's kind of got a Leave It to Chance vibe that series that James Robinson did years ago. Like it's got the like a plucky young heroine who gets into adventures and likes to do the right thing, and all the adults around her are trying to hold her down, push her back, you know, and it's neat. Like it's there's a lot of world building going on. Like it in that first book, in that first chapter, you get the sense that there's going to be these two worlds and she's going to be bouncing back and forth between the two worlds. But by the second issue, that has been pretty much set aside, and she's exploring this third world where science and magic kind of work together. And it's really neat seeing how they like each issue you just get a little bit more sense of how this world works. It's there's a lot of world building going on, but it's not sort of in your face world building. It's just kind of subtle and in the background, and each issue you get a little more sense of, oh, this is how this world works, and oh, look, there's someone with four arms, and there's someone who's a camel, or like it's neat the way things are just kind of dropped in. And
okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's well worth the read for sure. And
yeah,
and like you said, like it's $2, but you get a ton of story.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like what was that? Little Nemo.
Oh yeah.
Where everything is just kind of wonky, but no one questions the wonkiness.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Or even like Legion of Superheroes future time. It's like, yeah, you got a guy, with a horse's body and but hands and whatever, and an eye stock guy, whatever.
Yeah.
The famous eye stock guy.
It's cool, and there's certainly an ongoing story that's kind of building in the background, and the very latest issue said issue 6 will conclude, or issue 6 is going to be the conclusion. So I don't know if that means it's just a 6-issue series, or if it means, you know, this is the end of our first story arc and then we're moving on to the next story arc. Like I would guess that it's going to be like, mm-hmm. there's so much potential in this series that they can continue to go on and on. So I'm guessing it means the end of the first arc, but
that's a good way to start something like that, though. Because it seems like it's got a lot more scope than some of the other books.
Oh yeah, it can go so many places, because you're exploring the world, you're exploring Amelia's background, because she doesn't really know. She grew up thinking she was from one world. Now she thinks she's maybe from this new world that she's found herself on. She can't really travel anymore. There's lots to explore for sure.
It's Amethyst.
Yeah, it kind of is.
It does remind me of that.
That's cool. I mean, as an Amethyst fan, maybe I need to catch myself up here.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to writing the rest of them myself.
Time to pull my head out of my butt.
There's just funny little things. Like, she used to have a magic wand, and in this new world, she's got a magic wrench because her wand broke, and she happened to have a wrench in her hand, and now that's how she focuses her magic, and it's just kind of cool. Like, there's little, just little things. She's trying to find her way in this world, so she needs a job, so now she's a superintendent of an apartment building, and you know, she tries to fix things, and it's neat that the way they've set the world up is that there are people with magic, there are people without magic, and it's very much a class system, so there's this bubbling undercurrent of magic people are supposed to behave a certain way. They're not supposed to help the non-magic people because then they will become dependent on the magic people, and Amelia Cole is having none of that. She's like, well, you help people when you help people. There's other little characters that have popped up. She's created for herself a big golem made out of spare parts from this abandoned building, so he kind of wanders around the stories. And it's a fun read for sure. I would recommend it. And it comes out regularly. So that
apparently, yeah, that's a good plus, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Next up. Go ahead.
I have all of them, but I haven't read them. I've read number one, but I haven't read 2 through 5 yet.
Yeah, I've only read the first one. I just bought the rest of them, so I'll be looking forward to that. Now, one I have been keeping up on is next one is Edison Rex, which is written by Chris Roberson himself. And who else is doing it?
The artist is
Dennis Culver.
Right.
And this is pretty much one of those taking the superhero concept and turning it on his ear kind of things. But the Edison Rex, it says here, is the smartest man in the world, a criminal genius, and the arch nemesis of the world's greatest protector, Valiant. Having dedicated his life to defeating Valiant and proving once and for all that he is a menace to humanity and not a hero, what will Edison do once he finally succeeds? And with Valiant out of the way, who will be left to protect the Earth? Now, if you're a fan of the old style Superman Silver Age stuff,
totally.
That is this book. It's got all that kind of little hints and Easter eggs and that kind of thing. And even has who's pages and some of the issues talks about, which I need to go back and read those because I know Roberson, he's great with that kind of stuff, with the details and whatever. So I'm looking forward to that, reading that. So, the rest of that. I need to go back when I have time and read those little pages that he does. But it is a great book. Makes kind of fun of the superhero concept, tongue-in-cheek. Doesn't, like, you know, make it a complete parody, but, it looks like a good one.
Time for me to catch up, but given how short these are, I mean, you can literally read one of these in, like, 4 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, at a buck, it's good. It's good. I mean, it's good stuff. He's a really good writer. Good stuff.
He is totally playing around in the Silver Age. It is really, it's really cool to see. Like you,
mm-hmm.
But it doesn't totally rely on the. I mean, you can read it without knowing any Superman Silver Age stuff, but if you do, like you get, they're a little. Like, it's not a complete Superman takeoff, but there's lots and lots there that
I just love it.
You get the Fortress of Solitude, and you've got the
Bizarro
sort of
character. All that stuff, yeah.
It's a lot of fun, and I love the supporting cast he's building. Each issue he kind of introduces a new character who is part of his support team there. So he's got the alien warrior woman who is his like right hand man, and he's got sort of a brainiac lady. Yeah. You know what? It's very heavy on the female characters. Edison Rex is male, but pretty much every other strong character is female. You've got the Lady Brainiac, you've got the Lady Warrior Woman, you've got the Lady Slug Beast, who is
yes, that was fun.
Well, it should come as no surprise. I mean, this is the guy who wrote who was writing Ferris. He's the guy who wrote Cinderella, the Cinderella miniseries for spinoffs from from Fables. I mean, he likes to write strong female characters.
Yeah, he does.
And it's not in your face at all, but it's just kind of cool to see when you step back. Oh yeah. Yeah. It's neat to see. I really like the new character that he's introduced, the big slug
that's so funny.
Yes, so the sexually funny. Charged slug that's all hot to trot for Mr. Edison Rex.
Yeah, I caught a little. I was just skimming through her pages and talking to, you know, it said something about sexual harassment and all this other stuff. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, and that's the other thing that's really cool. He's taken the Who's Who's pages, but he's wonked them up just a little bit so that they're all written from Edison Rex's point of view.
Yeah.
Which is fun.
Yeah, I think it's great. I really do. It's good stuff. It's one I really enjoy. Really enjoy.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it too. And again, it's one that I wasn't sold on the artist, but each issue... Yeah, I'm coming more and more to appreciate the who is it? Dennis Culver? Is that it? I think.
Yeah, Dennis Culver.
Yeah, more and more I'm coming to appreciate his style, and he uses the digital format really well. Like he uses the panels in a way that you can read it. Like as a whole page, or you can read it panel by panel, and both ways work.
Yeah, I agree.
It's enjoyable. It's a good read.
Even the kids agree.
Yes.
Sorry.
Totally.
No, that's all right. That's cool.
I'll go put this in duct tape over
here. Don't worry about it.
Awesome.
Don't worry about it. Let's see. What else we got? That's probably my favorite one. I mean, you know, well, obviously, because of being superhero, but, yeah.
It's up there. I would say my favorite is probably Masks and Mobsters.
Agreed. Yeah, I just recently got into this. It's been out for a while, and I thought I'd give it a shot. I read the first issue, liked it, and then I've read them all now. It's really good stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's really good. I love the artwork, the artist plays with the blacks and the whites
mm-hmm.
gray so well.
And they call it a noir crime anthology. See, it's by Joshua Williamson and a rotating team of artists. But
it hasn't really been rotating, though.
It says it's to showcase a standalone story set in fictional Golden City where the mob has started to fight back against those who would try to steal their piece of the pie, and it's like I'd say late 30s, early 40s kind of timeline, and superheroes are showing up and the mob doesn't like it, and it's kind of from their point of view. But you're right, there it really hasn't been
there was one guest artist, number four, Jason Copeland did the Tower story.
It's really good stuff. I really liked it.
And the use of black and white, really reminiscent of Sin City.
Yes, that's a good point. Very good point.
This is a world that the way that this guy, who the heck is the writer?
Joshua Williamson. Yeah.
Right. He is creating his own little Astro City hero here.
You know what? That's exactly how I was thinking of it too. It's very much like Astro City.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good analogy for sure.
Yeah, I mean it's all in this one town, and it's funny. There's no super villains. It's just the bad guys are regular day to day mobster guys. You know, mm-hmm. Hey, I'm gonna kill your girlfriend with my gat and stuff. I can't do a William G. Robinson, but
that's okay.
And then they're fighting superheroes who none of them seem to be. I mean, some of them seem to have superpowers, but there doesn't seem to be any extreme superpowers like Superman level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very golden agey. Like they're guys that have put on masks and they've got gadgets and
Domino masks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There was the one guy, the tower guy, who was bulletproof, but that's
Yeah. And Dr. Daylight, it was, which was just a It's like he had a big staff with a light bulb on it, and he was really good at fighting. That was pretty good. And, of course, you know, he's got the fedora and a cape. Very Crimson Avenger, if you know what that character looks like. That's what it reminded me of.
And it's got that ongoing, you know, each issue is almost a self-contained little fight between the mobsters and the superheroes. But there's that ongoing plot line about, and no spoilers intended, but who kills Dr. Sunlight?
Yeah.
Kind of like who killed in Powers. What was it? Who killed
Retro Girl?
Retro Girl. Yeah.
And I just got one of the latest hardcover in the mail the other day. I'm looking forward to read it.
So I mean, there's a lot to like about this title, and mm-hmm. I mean, you know, comparisons aside with other, you know, very popular books, this is, you know, because it's got the Sin City vibe, it's got the Astro City vibe, it's got Powers vibe, but it is also its own. It's also very self-contained, and even without those reference points, it holds up. Yeah. Like the Christmas special.
Oh yeah, yeah, that one was really good.
Yes, lots of fun. You know, I think you could probably pick up any of these issues and read them in any particular order. Like, I don't – even though there's sort of an underlying thread that ties all the stories together, I think you could probably grab any issue, read it, and go and then read any other issue. Like, it's not like there's – they're very much standalone stories in sort of the same world. Like, it's not a book that requires you to have read – issue one and then issue two, the way that some of the other ongoing series do. This one you can kind of pick up and pick and choose the issues that you want, I think.
Yeah, I disagree. I think you have to pick up number one, but then you could pick up any of the other ones.
That makes sense.
Number one. Yeah.
Number one has the start of the underlying thread, the B plot about Dr. Sunlight, but
yeah, that's
right. Absolutely. You could pick up the Christmas special and not be lost. You could pick up number four and not be lost.
All right. I'll give you that. Totally.
Thank you.
I agree. Let's see. The one I haven't read that sounds interesting is The Spirit of the Law.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's a two-part series set in the Great Depression. Sammy Workman is lucky to have a job, even as a mob hitman. But when hit goes wrong, Workman and his men find themselves stalked by the paranormal vigilante they've accidentally created. You've seen plenty of superhero origins. Now see the one from the villain's point of view. It's a two-part noir pulp mashup from Brandon Seifert, creator of Witch Doctor and writer of Doctor Who, and Michael Montanet, artist of Hellraiser and Pilot Season Anonymous. It sounded interesting. I bought that before the podcast started. Looking forward to reading that.
It's really good. It's in the same vein as the Masked and Mobsters. It could almost be like a spinoff from that. Because again, it's got the Edward G. Robinson mobsters going through it, mm-hmm. and you know, the spirit thing. And again, it's got an Astro City vibe. It really does. What was that character, the Hangman in Astro City?
Yeah, that was weird.
Kind of like that. You got this chick gets killed, and it turns out that she was a psychic, and her spirit is coming back to kill those who killed her, and then it does end definitely. I didn't realize it was only two-part, because it ends on a...
Yeah, it actually says that in the...
Yeah, and it says it right here in the solicit. I didn't read the solicit. I just thought it looked good, like a good idea, and I recommend it. It's a lot of fun. It's I got to see if I can find this guy, this Brandon Seifert, on Facebook and let him know.
Cool.
I will have to look at it. That's what I missed. I missed it.
And it's interesting, they put it as 17 plus as the recommended age group, and I don't understand that. It seems...
Well, we've all had, there's been a lot of stuff that I thought should have that rating in it, and not, so you never know.
Well, it's funny.
I would have put it younger. I wouldn't, you know, I'm not going to show it to my 5-year-old, but I would share it with my 10-year-old.
And I think I will. I think that will be my this week goal. Since the poor kids have to go back to school, I will. I will treat them to comic books on occasion this week.
That's funny.
Poor little waifs.
Yeah.
I feel for them.
Back to the grind.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, again, it is very much a mobsters versus superhero in a way. Though this chick really isn't a superhero; she's quite a bit more deadly.
Let's see what else we got. Now, one of their first ones that came out was a one-shot short story, "Thoughts of a Winter Morning," which is an autobiographical tale from Kurt Busiek. I think he wrote it as a reprint from something else, but he wrote it around the time he had his first kid, I think, if I remember correctly. And it's really good. Art's really good in it, too. If you haven't checked that out, it's 99 cents, yeah.
Speaking of Astro City.
Yes. Good stuff. Good stuff. Love his stuff.
I bought it, but I haven't read it yet. It's in my...
It's really good. It's, you know, not very long, and it's a nice little story. So, something to, you know, get your spirits up. It's good stuff.
Okay. Uplifting.
Yes, very uplifting.
The one I want to read, but I haven't even bought it yet, is this one, The Stars Below.
Yeah, that looked interesting.
I think that read it through. Around the same time as Thoughts on a Winter Morning, I think.
Did it come out at the same time?
I think it was close. They kind of...
Yeah, release date 10/31/2012.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to add that. Again, at a buck, I can see myself just picking these up on a whim. I mean, it's like, oh, look, a candy bar. I might as well grab one.
Yeah, exactly.
And seriously, 99 cents, and then... You know, and they don't, it's not like that. It's a teaser, 99 cents. Every issue, 99 cents. At least the ones that are priced at a buck. You know, there's a couple, like the last title, that are priced a little higher, but not out of the range of affordability.
So, right. Zach Smith, he's from Newsarama. He's the one that wrote that. According to.
He won't hold that against
him. No. As long as he didn't write any top 10 lists.
Top 10 books about pigeons.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, it says age rating 9 plus. That looks more like something you'd read to kids. I might pick it up sometime.
That's funny. None of these are rated below that age group, but they're definitely. I mean, again, Action Cats, Aesop's Ark. I would share those with young kids in heartbeat. And,
let's see. The other one they have listed is this thing called Red Light Properties, which apparently is from somebody else. He had printed this on his own, and he brings it into Monkey Brain, and there is a bunch of these. It's like 4 or 5 books, and they got it in English, Portuguese, and Spanish, all 99 cents. It's about a Jude and Cecilia Tobin, married owners of Miami's only exorcism / real estate agency, specializing in previously haunted homes, as they battle the marriage-crushing pressures of drug-fueled daily operations. Okay, that sounds interesting, sort of. I don't know. That doesn't sound like my cup of tea.
It's a neat series because they've got it coming out in 3 languages. They've got it in English, Portuguese, and...
Yeah,
Spanish. It's very Sesame Street.
That's interesting. 17
minutes. As long as there's no Elmo, I'm... I don't want to be touched in bad ways.
Yes. Interesting. And let's see. The only other thing left on here is Wander. Olive Hopkins and the Ninth Kingdom. Seems like a fantasy thing. It's 2 issues have come out. This is one I haven't even looked at.
I looked at the first issue, and I didn't love it. I didn't like it. It was... I didn't pick up the second issue. The first issue was... It,
I think it's supposed to be humorous, and the jokes just kind of felt snarky or forced or...
Well, yeah, from the description, it sounds like that. It says, after storming out of her crappy coffee shop job, perpetual New York NYU grad student Olive Hopkins decided to throw a massive pity party for herself using the last of her meager savings. She discovers the next morning that not only does she have a massive hangover, she's somehow been transported into the Knife Kingdom. Fantasy realm straight out of that section of Barnes & Noble she always avoided. How did she get here? How is she going to get home? Most of all, where can she get a good slice and a pack of Camel Lights? She's dying here. Now, see, I don't know. That kind of thing seems like it's been done to me.
And your comment about the snarky, I know that you are a fan of some of those Disney shows, but that's always one of the things that bothers me about those, is it's constantly snark, 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 and that's what this sounds like it's going to be.
Yeah.
It didn't work for me. It might for some people, it might be just the thing they're looking for, but I don't know. It wasn't pushing my buttons. It's the only one that I really actively disliked.
Wow.
To me, it didn't work. I didn't like the tone. I didn't enjoy the way the characters spoke.
Was it trying too hard? Would that be fair to say?
That's what I'm getting, just from the preview pages.
It kind of felt that way to me. A little bit trying too hard, and I don't know. Not my thing. Just kind of. It felt kind of hipster.
Yeah, I'm kind of getting that vibe.
Hipster. Hipster doofuses, okay.
Oh, it's written by Kevin Church.
What does that mean?
I've talked to him before. He does a blog. I can't remember the name of it. And he's kind of like that. Yeah, BukuKevin.com. Kevin Church has been writing for a while now, but he has a serious case of imposter syndrome. You might know him from his webcomics like The Rack. She died in Terrebonne, and the loneliest astronauts from anywhere from towns such as Cover Girl, Chitulu Tales, and Room Studios. But yeah, Buku Kevin, I've read his blog before, and he's very, hipster sounds like probably where that's coming from. So
it's probably got an audience, like for someone. It's just, I'm not it.
Yeah, he's pretty, as far as I know, he's pretty somewhat, well known from the blog, and he's got other stuff that he does, but yeah, that explains why it's like that then.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I've talked to him on IM before. He's a pretty interesting guy, so.
Excellent. Well, there you go. He's got his fans. He doesn't need me to buy the book.
Probably not. Probably not, but I'm sure it wouldn't hurt feelings.
And this is also one of their pricier books, but I think that I'm sure the length accommodates that, because it's $1.99.
Yeah, it's 22 pages for the first one.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like DC length. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. It's the second one.
I can dig it.
Yeah, 20 pages for the next one. But anyway, yeah, not my cup of tea, I don't think, just from what I saw. But anyway, I think that's what we covered them all that they have so far. I think they're planning on putting more stuff out later on.
I would like to see a couple things from these guys. I'd like to see consistency in publishing schedule for some of these books, and I would like
be nice.
To see stuff collected in print. I really would.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool.
I would buy Aesop's Ark. As a published book, I would buy Masks and Mobsters.
Yes, I would too.
What else would I buy as a published book? I don't know. If it ever came out,
I would love to see October Girl. Like, I mean, the art is really gorgeous, and I could, I would, mm-hmm. it would look really good in a heavier paper print version.
Yeah, that would be good. Looking forward to reading that again.
I think Chris Roberson has hit on something really good here, and I don't know what his his big picture plan is for Monkey Brain.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. His blog, his own blog, isn't there. Isn't much there.
Yeah, I wonder if it's like, will it be like the image of the digital world, like a place where creators just come to do their digital thing, and some things will be ongoings, and some things will be on time, and some things will never get finished and will vanish into the ether. And
I was wondering about that. I was wondering about what the finance model is, and I was wondering, you know, not for my personal self, but can people send stuff to him to publish? Like, you know, that image, you know, have a certain amount of your book, you can go to them and say, hey, I want to use you guys, and if they feel it's up to snuff, they will support it. They'll put the image logo on their book.
Yeah, I just went to the contact section on their page, and it says, very first line, please note we are not accepting unsolicited submissions at this time.
There you go.
So
you must be invited to the club.
Yeah, and like the last news was November 27th, and that's when the Red Light Properties came out. So, according to this,
it is.
It's more like a press release. Yeah, it's like a press release for it.
So you're right. It is. It is very much a, you know, be invited. So, I guess Red Light Properties, there was, you know, he felt that there was enough of an audience for what had gone on already. He said, "Hey, come on in. I'll put my logo on your book, and I will digitize it, and we will get you on Comixology, and you will get huge exposure internationally."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you go to the press page. It's got just like a. It's got some, you know, pictures, but most of it is just like links to articles and podcasts and stuff.
Yes, it is. They need to clean that up. It's actually kind of ugly, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's kind of the link dump is kind of, but, you know.
Weak, man. It's weak. I mean, overall, I would say it's a strong company. And you're right. I think that their model could, it could rival, or it could be a digital rival for our image.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if they concentrate on the digital stuff and then get things, you know, up there, then yeah, I could. Pardon me, I could see that. I haven't been sleeping well. Still sick.
It's all very exciting to Chris here.
No, I'm excited. I'm just tired. Tired. Can't you tell? Can't you tell by the sound of my voice how excited I am? Anyway.
Poor Miss Mosby.
Yeah, and poor me. That's right.
Now, speaking of misters, Mr. Fox, you have to go out and make your classroom presentable for students, right?
Yes.
Yes, we better let you go then.
Mr. Fox, can we?
Stop it. I'm going to hear that all day tomorrow.
Oh, come on. You like it.
I love it.
I just have to know, do you wear the cool clothes for school, or yeah, do you have to wear?
What? No, when I started teaching at a school, I was pulled aside and said, this is a tie and jacket school. So at that school, I wore like a tie and a jacket. But since then, I haven't had to. I wear my shorts, and I'm very comfortable.
Oh, funny. Mm-hmm. So they're just kind of letting you do whatever, huh?
Well, I think the first school I was at was a great school. The principal was very old school, and he was the principal of my middle school. So I was working for someone that I used to be a student for. So in that case, it was easier to cave and you know, dress the part. But
I see.
Times have changed in the last 20 years, so
have they?
I figure if I'm teach art, I'm going to wear my comfy clothes and get messy.
Yeah.
It's only 20 below. Perfect short weather for shorts weather for Canada. So.
Yeah.
Totally. No worries.
Whatever.
It's right. Funny.
I forgot to bounce. So.
All right. We'll see you later.
All right. I'm sorry. I had to know. I had to.
I know.
All right, then. Well, that's it for this week. So that's about it. Yeah, we'll let you go. And as usual, you can give us an email at podcast@talesfromwombox.com. You can check us out on the Facebook. Nice little group going on there. All kinds of conversations going on. And let's see what else. Oh yes, you can comment on the actual website, and that's talesfromlongbox.com/the show. So let us know. Anyway, that's about it.
Julio.
All right.
See y'all later.
See you next week.
Bye.